Welcome to the Peace Wanted podcast. Hi, Nov.
Hi, Rachel.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's really lovely to talk to you. And at the moment, we are near Geneva, talking with lots of other people who work on UCP. And it's so nice to talk to you because I know that you have really interesting set of background of how you came to this world and why you're so interested in it. And I'd love to talk to you about that.
I'm looking forward to having this conversation. I appreciate it.
Fantastic. How did you end up talking about and learning about unarmed civilian protection and why we should protect civilians in the midst of our conflict?
That's a great question. I think thinking about my entry point to the practice and also field of unarmed civilian protection brings me back, brings me back perhaps 10 years ago when I was still living in the Philippines. I grew up in Manila, and as a university student, I started in theater in the university, and I was, I've been performing in theater even as a child, but in the university I auditioned for a play, and that's where I came up with my nickname, actually.
Is it?
Yes. So I was auditioning for this play in the university, and there was a long line of actors, and they were handing out this form that you need to fill up, and I thought I would come up with a cool nickname so they would pick me. And so I came up with my nickname Nerve, and I got the role, and so I performed with my nickname Nerve. But the role in the theater was about the Philippine Revolution of 1896. Mm-hmm. It was an anti-colonial revolutionary movement. And I did not know that it was a political theater organization that I auditioned for. And that was my entry point in terms of, I guess, the politicization. I was politicized at that moment in the university, learning about human rights more broadly, learning about the armed conflict that is happening in the Philippines, both across the country, but specifically in Luzon, in Visayas, and also in Mindanao. So I was exposed to the political violence that has been happening in the country. So that started. Mm-hmm. And when I was in the university, I was active in social movements, both as a student activist, student leader, student organizer, who eventually helped with union organizing, labor organizing, and also doing work as an independent researcher and filmmaker for the indigenous people's movements in the country. So that was my entry point into understanding some of the context that surrounds my country, Philippines, in terms of political violence and resistance to political violence. And most of the work that I witness with human rights defenders, indigenous people's rights leaders, they carry out projects that are unarmed, unarmed meaning they engage in democratic processes of either political engagements, running for office, or campaigning, and all this advocacy work, basically. And then from there on, I pursued graduate school, and I finished my master's and a PhD in geography. And when I was thinking about what project I would be focusing on for my dissertation, I was working, I was still coming from that experience of trying to make sense of how people navigate political violence. That was the bigger question. I came in with that question. I was specifically curious about how indigenous peoples are navigating this kind of entanglement between the Philippine government and the non-state armed groups that have been operating within indigenous areas. And I work with a faculty, with my professor, who studied peace building, local peace building processes in Bosnia. And so we've been in conversation thinking about local processes, local actors, local contexts of peace building. Back then, we were not talking about UCP. This was around 2013. We were both concerned, me and my advisor were concerned about community practices of peacemaking, peace building. And with my particular research project, I was particularly focusing on how civilian communities can create spaces of protection through this phenomenon that this community specifically referred to as zones of peace. And a few years after that, I started working with a community of scholars, including you, Rachel, and with Barrett Bleesman de Guevara, and then I encountered the literature and the work on UCPA, on unarmed civilian protection and accompaniment.
Yeah.
Back then, I was already reading and hearing and learning about accompaniment because of other literatures that I've read were focusing on accompaniment, and there's a history of that in the Philippines with PBI and other organizations. But the my engagement with UCPA started in 2020 when I started working with you and Barrett and everybody, and really kind of learning about this broader field of unarmed civilian protection that exists in many parts of the world. That also resonate with other practices that many communities around the world are doing.
Yeah, that's so there are lots of things there, because one of them is we're working together on this research with creativity in it, and you came from theater and filmmaking, so it's just perfect, isn't
it? I think, like, now that I'm thinking about it, like, I wouldn't have thought about tracing it back to that. And now that we're working together, and maybe for your listeners, Rachel and I, and among others, have been working on this research network called Creating Safer Space Network. And the idea of the network is to first gather scholars who are invested in questions about unarmed civilian protection practices and theory, and also expand this community of scholars by actually engaging other practitioners, grassroots organizations, NGO practitioners, and also academics. Through this network, we actually supported different research projects around the world that also give an emphasis on participatory action research, but also creative methods of research information and dissemination.
So we're still using those today, because we still talk about making a film. So watch out for that coming.
Exactly. And I'm glad that your podcast is happening, because this is also one way of creatively communicating the wealth of knowledge about UCP practices and theory.
Yeah. And you talk about how, like, your engagement with political processes and local peace building. And I wondered if you'd thought about or seen in all of that, why is protection so crucial to making societies work better?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think my first response is that there's so much harm and suffering and violence that on an everyday basis, people from many parts of the world have to face the threats, the fear, the risks, both physical, emotional, psychological, and the actual direct harm and violence and deaths that people have to face. I think that is the unfortunate context that compel us to really pay attention to what other forms of protection can we offer, or what other forms of protection that many people are doing that can offer us new ways of thinking about civilian protection beyond, say, the traditional mainstream practices of civilian protection, wherein it's heavily militarized, it's heavily concentrated on state power or state infrastructures. And in contexts wherein, in many contexts wherein the state is the source of that political violence and that fear and intimidation and threats and deaths, how can we then think about civilian protection outside those frameworks?
Yeah. And is that true in Philippines?
In the Philippines, I think in many instances, particularly, you know, one of the key moments of political violence is during the dictatorship, where there is a failure, you know, like the state and the government is not working.
Yeah.
Meaning like it doesn't provide the protection that civilians deserve.
Yeah.
It's a particular context we're in. Many communities really came up with their own initiatives, with their own innovations on how they can protect themselves. And again, like communities in the Philippines that I'm more familiar with, these practices have been going on for decades, even for many years, that they have their own internal practices of keeping their families and their communities safe and away from harm.
Yeah.
And so In the situation wherein there's an intense political violence, many communities would rely on those histories and those memories and those practices of community self-protection.
Yeah. So that's quite interesting. So there is this long history. How do we start getting people to talk about it or to make it part of a memory or the way we create social systems, I suppose, isn't it? Maybe including traditional or community leaders.
Right. I guess like for researchers, the challenge is to really learn from the communities that we work with, right? Because again, like these practices are already in place, are already existing, and are already innovating and developing minute by minute. In each context of the community, one community faces violence and implements their existing practices of protection, they would innovate again the next time they engage or face.
Constantly changing.
Exactly. It's constantly iterative. It's constantly changing. It's constantly improving. And so I think the challenge for researchers is to pay attention and is to learn from these practices. That's one way. But I think among community members themselves, you know, when we speak about how do we learn more about these things, I think one of the challenges among civilian communities that I've encountered or interacted with is really what we would normally call kind of production, right? Like social reproduction. Like how do they maintain these practices, right? Like that's always the challenge. It could be an intergenerational challenge wherein like the older community members who led this kind of practices, say like in the 80s or the 90s, they would want the younger generation to learn about the practice and continue the practice, right? So I think there's a big challenge among community members who are engaged in UCP practices. How can they reproduce or maintain this kind of practices, I think it's a big challenge.
So it's like, it's about how do we not only study what people do, but also how communities work and how the resilience is built and how, it reminds me of some work where people say that it's handing down language and traditions is really important to make them feel safe and part of their
community.
That's
a great way to put it because, you know, when we teach language to, say, like a second generation, like a younger generation, it's cultural, right? And I think that's one way to think about UCP. It's a way of life, right? Yeah. It's a way of life in a way that it's a set of practices. It's a set of norms. It's a set of values that I think you just don't teach strategies of UCP in different among different generations. You really teach or you pass on, I guess, this kind of like a comprehensive way of living and protecting your community from harm. Yeah.
That's an amazing way of thinking about it, isn't it? That it's already with us.
Yeah.
And it's about communicating and accepting and learning it.
Right.
Great,
yeah.
So I'm going to ask you a harder question. If you had to think about going forward, what is a key thing that we should maybe focus on if we're going to try and create more protection? Or more opportunities for unarmed people to protect others?
I could think of like maybe three key points that we can think about. I mean, the first one in this, you know, like many people are already talking about and thinking about this, is like how do we illustrate the power of UCP? How do we make How do we communicate to many people that first there are already existing UCP practices and that in most cases they work to protect civilian lives from death? So that's number one. Second is really thinking about really understanding the concrete material challenges that communities face in their practice of UCP. And for me, one of the key challenges that communities face when they implement UCP practices within their communities is really legitimacy, like a common hurdle that they face from the state or from non-state actors or from both is really the legitimization of their practice, because yeah. It's not, you know, state led, or it's not, you know, blessed by non-state actors,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think like how communities can bolster the legitimacy of their work. It's not that they need to justify the yeah. legitimacy of their work, because it is justified.
It is their work.
And it is their work, yeah. And it's legitimate. The right to live is a universal right. But I think when they face the state and non-state armed actors telling them, well, you can't do that. You have to follow whatever rules that the yeah. state or non-state actors are forcing communities to follow. I think there's a hurdle there that I think UCP practitioners and scholars who study UCP can do a better job yeah. in understanding and maybe coming up with a set of practices and solutions or recommendations for the communities.
Yeah.
And then I think the third is really like circulation of knowledge, right? Like I think a lot of this is really coming, it's a question of teaching, right?
Yeah.
It's a question of research, but it's mostly also a question of how do we then teach the lessons to a broader public.
Yeah.
So I think for both the community members and for the broader public, I think there is a need to do more pedagogical activities around UCP.
Yeah.
Really like sharing and teaching some of the insights and wisdom and knowledges and practices and experiences of communities who do UCP.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. So I love that you've got this really clear vision of what's needed in communities and what other people's responsibility is to help and support them, really rooted in we're gonna make this better.
So. Absolutely. I think like, and I'm not coming up with new ideas. These are ideas that are already emanating and happening in communities.
Yeah, fantastic. I really love hearing all about how you came to this and your really clear and community-focused ideas on UCP. And what I hope is that as our projects develop, maybe we can talk more about how they worked and how the different visions are developing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to learning from the different projects within the Creating Safer Space Research Network and learning new ways of doing research but also teaching about UCP.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, and we will hear from you again.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck. Good
pleasure.
Luck with it all.
Thank you so much, Rachel. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Come back soon.